What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Stacking Slabs. This is your hobby content alternative. I'm your host, Brent McGrath. I collect sports cards, have a podcast about collecting sports cards, and every damn Friday, I drop a collector conversation that should matter to you. This time, we're unlocking a new guest. I got my man, James, at Mad City Collector on the damn program. I have enjoyed interacting with him in the Patreon group about set collecting. We have been going back and forth, and he also joined a monthly live stream that we hosted. And I thought this was just a really good topic to bring to the main feed. The power of set collectors, how it impacts values, why we collect sets, all of these questions we have answered in this episode. If you like what I'm doing over here, follow, subscribe, do all the things. Join the damn Patreon group. Would appreciate it at any level. Whatever you want to do to show your support, I am pouring a ton of energy into that. Also, tell a damn friend that you're enjoying the Stacking Slabs podcast, would you? I'd appreciate that. I'm out here working for you, the collector. And it starts with this conversation with James at Mad City Collector. Let's kick into the conversation. All right, we are excited. This is a topic that I have been digging into quite a bit myself, looking at kind of talking with collectors, looking through data. And I feel like James at Mad City Collector, he not only participates in this topic, but I feel like has some good thoughts. So we did a live stream not too long ago in the group and felt like it just wasn't enough, and I wanted to bring it to everyone today. So we're going to talk about the power of set collectors. I'm joined by James at Mad City Collector. James, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to join you.
Yes, we're going to... This is such a broad topic, and I know we've shared some notes, but maybe we start here. Maybe like defining set collecting and maybe your perspective around that, like... What, as collectors, and maybe especially as like newer collectors who are listening to this, like how would you categorize like set collecting in general?
Yeah, so when I think about it, I feel like we would be remiss to like avoid talking about vintage. I mean, so since the beginning of essentially collecting, going back to the early 20th century, and particularly like in the 50s, I guess when trading cards really started to explode, like that was the main way people collected. Like, I'm sure there were player collectors, people collected Mickey Mantle and things like that. But that, from essentially the early 20th century all the way up until probably around the early 90s, like that was the main way people collected cards. And so, I think when the 90s hit, they started overprinting. It became almost too easy to collect sets at that point. And so people kind of, I think, almost got bored of it. And it became less of a kind of a chase, a fun challenge. Because I think, but with vintage cards, it's like, you're digging cards out of like attics, basements. Like you may only see them if you go to a card show. Like there's no eBay. There's no like, unless you like know a whole, network of dealers, like you can't, it was hard to find them. But then, I think as we got to the 90s, especially when eBay rolled around, collecting a set of like base cards that were like overprinted became, not nearly as challenging. And I think that was kind of the birth of, numbered parallels and refractors and short prints and all that. And so that was kind of the basis, when I, got back into collecting, as a kid, set collecting, that was the big thing like that you did. And then, so when I got back into it, I was like, how are people still set collecting? Like, seems like it's, too easy now with all like just the base, how much is printed, how easy it is to get them on eBay. And so I was like, I don't really, that seems too easy. Let me, I dabbled in player collecting, but then I was like, I never really found one player that above all else, I, really wanted to collect. I like this player, that player. And, I was like, how do I can't, if you start buying, different players, like side PC here, side PC there, it's like you become stretched way too thin in terms of cost. And like, you end up with kind of the okay cards versus like the best cards of like these people. And so I kind of had a, like a lot of people, I think I muddled through it until I kind of hit like almost like a crisis point. Like, what am I doing? Like, I have no focus. Like, and so I was like, let me go back to set collecting. And, there were a few kind of well-timed podcasts, I think, including, one of yours and, you know, discussions where I heard almost how set collectors had evolved in the modern era. And like, I think I mentioned to you, like, you know, Nat Turner, Spinatron were two people that, you know, kind of are, have, you know, big presences that talked about like collecting really iconic 90s sets. And so I was like, oh, like, you know, in the modern era, I went through the thought experiment. How am I going to, how do you set collect in the modern era and make it fun, challenging, collect something you feel is important, versus, you know, something you can actually accomplish. And so, you know, I kind of just went through that mental exercise. What could I do? Like, you know, could I go back to the 90s and collect some of the old basketball era sets? Like, you know, I looked at the PMGs and you're just like, holy cow, I can't. Even the Reds, which are numbered, you know, 90 copies of it. You're like, there's no way. Like, those, that's just, the numbers are too stratospheric. And so I was like, oh, you know, went to other eras. Like, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, then I was like, oh, 1996, you know, first year Topps Chrome, like, those are only refractors and base cards. Like, that's maybe a little too easy. But if you go to the PSA 10 route, then that's a little too hard. So, and so the two ways, like, you know, I think that where modern collectors kind of like do it, you can either go for like the numbered parallels, or you can go for graded scarcity, like PSA 10. So I was like, oh, those are two routes I could go. But then, and I think I've mentioned, like, you know, if you look at my collection, I've clearly pivoted toward only collecting soccer. And so I was like, oh, you know, that's a relatively unexplored space. So I can, thought I could find a really cool set within that space to kind of do it. So in the ways, I guess you could do it, like to your question, you could do complete base set, which I felt like was too easy. And then you can get into the numbered parallels, which the great thing about numbered parallels is, you know, you can go from like fairly high numbers to like really low numbers to try to accomplish it, depending on the degree of difficulty you want. Base sets, you know, they've kind of gotten, they can be pretty big. So, you know, I think on the low end, base sets probably end up in the 100 card range. And on the high end, I don't know, like, I'm not even sure what the high end, like 300, 400 cards. So like collecting 300 or 400 cards of just all the players in like a league or a set can, you know, depending on what parallel you pick, can just be a really daunting task. And if you don't appreciate like all the players, then you may not be excited by it. And then the other ways I thought that's really cool, if you have a smaller set, is insert sets. So, you know, those are typically numbered anywhere from like 10 to, you know, 50. And in theory, that would be more manageable. And, you know, those can be a non-number, you know, there's lots of non-numbered parallels, like, you know, Kabooms or, you know, various numbered or not numbered parallels of the inserts you could do as well too. So anyway, so that's kind of the thought experiment I like broke down when I was like thinking about like set collecting in the modern era, because it's kind of just waned, you know, compared to, you know, pre-1990. So.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm thinking a lot about this and I look back, and we're going to get into this, I'm sure, with just some of the conversation around collecting 90s parallels. And then I think a lot about like this era where there's a parallel for a parallel and a parallel on top of parallel. So it's almost like, where do you even start if you want to collect a parallel set of something today? You mentioned soccer, like you focused in on soccer. So maybe share, well, why was that your decision? Like, why one, did you pick soccer? And then two, within soccer, I know there's probably not as many sets and parallels as like a basketball or football, but what is your area of focus and what are you kind of building right now?
Yeah. So with soccer, I mean, there's a long lineage of like sticker collecting in it, but as far as modern soccer cards, you know, I guess first and foremost, I chose it because I've, to be honest, I'm a fan of all like the major American sports, but I've also been almost a bigger fan of like European soccer and even national team competitions like for three decades essentially. But so it wasn't hard for me to say as a fan, like, you know, I really love like collecting these players and like these cards. And the, like I said, so many people have like gone back to the 90s, and that just caused like this huge boom in interest and like value. And I was like, I can pick up almost, if you like translate, let's say like basketball or, you know, football to soccer, I can buy relatively like cards in high esteem in the sport that I love for much cheaper. And so that was part of the decision making process. And then when I was looking back specifically the era in soccer, so essentially modern soccer card collecting started in 2014, where you have all like the Panini Prisms and, you know, Select, and then Topps Chrome had its first iteration in like 2017. That era really, I was like, wow, that's essentially what happened in the late 90s, say in basketball is the best way to think about it. People who are familiar with basketball or even baseball, football, like that whole era when they shifted from kind of just base cards to, you know, shiny parallels that are numbered. So it was kind of that 2014, things weren't overprinted. And so, I was like, wow, that'd be a really cool era to collect in, because print runs aren't too high. A lot of the cards look really cool. And a lot of those players are the players that I loved, you know, over the last like 20 years, you know, all those sets included Messi, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, and a bunch of other players that I, you know, have enjoyed watching. So it just felt like a great era to collect. In terms of what I collect, the two kind of, if you're talking about shiny parallels, 2014 World Cup Prism and 2017-18 Topps Chrome are kind of, you know, seem to be rising to the top in terms of, you know, interest within the community, and they both, you know, are great looking cards. So those are the two that I was like, I was like, you know, I'd like to find a project in both of those. And the base set in Prism is pretty large. I think it's 250 to 300, something like that. So it's a pretty big base set. And I knew of at least one collector who was already doing the whole gold run for that. And so I was like, it's going to get expensive. Like, cause it's like, especially if you get out of the 10, especially out of 10 numbering, like if you start getting multiple people doing set collecting in that, which we'll get into later, it just, things can just go parabolic essentially. But, and so I was like, you know, 2017-18, like Topps Chrome 99 card base set. So not, you know, very manageable, tons of really awesome, like really iconic players, you know, from that era that would be awesome to collect. Their parallels are Super Fractor, red out of 10, orange out of 25, gold out of 50, green out of 99, blue out of 150, and purple out of 250. So that's like the color run. And so I was like, how difficult do I want to make this on myself? I was like, you know, 250, too easy. You know, I sort of want to go lower than that for sure. Gold is just like an amazing color. So I was like, could I do that? And I was looking at, you know, plug for your sponsor, Card Ladder. I went to there. I was like, how often do these gold sell? Like, can I do this? And like, they didn't really sell that often. So initially I was like, oh my God, you know, this may be hard to do. Cause like in the whole history of Card Ladder, a lot of them had only sold like, some had sold zero, some had sold one, two times publicly ever. And I was like, this could be really hard. But, that's kind of what I settled on. I was like, you know, that'll make it hard or be awesome. The golds look really amazing. And, so I was like, let me start this, see how it goes, like see how long it'll take me. And I just kind of went from there, and that kind of jump started my, you know, my journey in terms of set collecting.
So where are you at right now with the gold run?
So the gold run, about a month ago, I got my 98th of 99. So it took me about a year and a half to do it. And that's a good amount of time. It was like a, you know, fairly active if you're you know, picking up 98 cards over a year and a half, like, you know, you're getting good mail days, and you know, but it's hard enough. Like the last, you know, 20 were way harder than the first, like, you know, 75 or whatever. So it's just kind of a fun thing, and it's interesting. So, you know, like I was saying, you know, speak to this reason I enjoy set collecting is just getting a new piece of the set. It's almost like getting a grail, because that's your goal. Like, it's almost like I have to get this card. It's not, you know, it's like, so it's almost like a grail. It's like a mini grail in a sense, because you have to have it to complete the set. So you're almost as excited about that, even if it's a player you're not quite as excited about as like a lot of the other cards. But it's like a fun way to experience a mail day, like getting a new thing that is, you know, ticks you toward completion to something that has, you know, a finish in sight. So that's been a really awesome, you know, like challenge, and very doable.
There's so many different ways that we can collect. And this is the way I feel. This is my emotion here. I feel like a majority of the hobby is way indexed to player collectors. It just seems like if you pull 10 people and say, what do you collect? Like, I would imagine like 8 to 9 of those people will start with a player first, as opposed to a set. I guess one, do you feel the same way? And if you feel the same way, like, is that an opportunity for you as a set collector, or does it not matter at all?
Oh no, that's 100% my feeling. And to be honest, that was even partially why I was like, how about I become the best at this like one set? And that's just something that you don't see on like, say, like Instagram or hobby content. It's not in your face as much as like, you know, you know, player collectors who are just, you know, talking about this guy's the GOAT, that guy's the GOAT, this guy doesn't get enough love, like that guy doesn't get enough love or whatever. You're just like, I think people get about the right amount of love, like in terms of like player collecting. So it was kind of a zag, I guess you could say, in terms of like what I felt like the general hobby consensus was, that, oh, you just need to be a player collector and like, you know, go all in on a player and things like that. So I guess in a sense it was a zag but it also fit into like my kind of my general fandom, as opposed to maybe, you know, one team or one player that I was just like obsessed with, you know, maybe kind of more my just characteristic of my fandom as much as anything.
Have you ever thought to yourself, because it is a unique way to collect, even though set collectors were kind of like the foundation for which the hobby was built, but it's in this era, it is unique. Do you ever ask yourself, why am I doing this? Like, why am I a set collector? Is there anything from like maybe how you collected as a kid, other walks of life that you've thought about that leads you to like look at what you're doing in the hobby and with your collection and be like, okay, this might be the reason why I'm more attracted to this approach as opposed to just like going and picking a player and trying to get their best cards?
Yeah, I mean, it probably is a personality thing in the sense like I've enjoyed it. It gives you a very finite, specific journey that like, as opposed to just, you know, kind of in a player collection, you're just trying to level up. You're like, oh, consolidate, level up, you know, things like that. I was like, there's no end in sight really to it. Like, you're like never satisfied. You're never really like accomplishing a specific goal necessarily. Unless your goal is to consolidate all your cards for a PMG green Michael Jordan or something like that. Like, and that's, but then you, you know, it's like, I guess there is an end, you know, in that sense, but I don't know. I like that. And then, you know, and then you can, and I also looked at kind of, I mean, this is a hobby for me. Like I'm not looking to, you know, retire on the cards or anything or do anything like that. And so I was like, and I also thought about how can I sustain this as like something that brings me joy and like brings me a hobby where I'm, you know, building towards something, trying to accomplish something. And I was like, even going back to like say Nat Turner and Spinatron, when I was looking at what they did, I mean, they have longevity in like this whole set collecting thing. It's given them a purpose for like, you know, it seems like multiple decades in terms of just being able to sustain their interest and like trying to accomplish something. And that's what I was really looking to do, is like having something where I could sustain my, you know, interest. Like, cause you know, like you said, once you get to a certain price range on cards, it's really hard to start keep leveling up and say like player collecting. But if you're collecting a set, you can always buy $100 card for a set or something like that and still find, like I said, find that same grail, almost excitement that you get from like the really high value cards.
You mentioned how you view this is just a hobby for you and you're not looking to retire off of it, which I can relate with. I also think that even though it's a hobby, sometimes we catch ourselves like getting very obsessive and impatient over not being able to acquire the cards we need in the time and that we want them. And I have like dipped my toe here and there on the set collecting path. And I realize that like I can get overly obsessive and like it becomes just the silliest card too. Like maybe like the least important card becomes the most important card in a way. Yeah. I'm curious, as someone who's like going through a project as significant as like 99 gold or 100 or 99, whatever it is, gold parallels, how do you like manage like patience and like giving yourself grace as you're undergoing this monstrous mission to complete the collection?
Yeah, you come up with some parameters, what makes sense and like what you, you know, every time I go for an auction, you know, something one I need that comes up, I go through the exercise of like, you know, what's a reasonable price to pay for it? What could I reasonably pay? You know, typically what I am willing to pay is tends to be substantially like higher than, you know, what other people for random, especially for random players, especially for the, so like, but, and so, you know, to be honest, I get pushback from people who like chat me on like Instagram, like you're a lunatic for paying like, for this card. I'm like, well, like you guys are paying for these prospects who I know are going to like decrease in value by 90% for the most part. And I'm a lunatic for paying for something that like, you know, is you know, definitely not going to increase by 90%. But anyway, I have parameters and, you know, especially out of 50, like when you pick a set out of 50, you do have like probably one will show up eventually. Like even if it's 6 months from now, a year from now, another one will show up. So the very last card I need in the set is the Kylian Mbappe. So that's, I guess, this is where I'm giving my grace with patience, I guess you could say, is that it's in PSA 10, it's in the 20 to 25K range. And so that's like a pretty substantial card. But in my mind, he's still a hobby darling in a sense where eventually I think unless he starts winning everything in terms of like tournaments and everything, his luster is going to, you know, die down for, especially for a card out of 50. But so I'm trying to give myself a little patience in terms of, you know, getting this last one. I don't necessarily need it in a PSA 10, but just like I'm like, you know, that's a lot of money. And I think I'm, from all my knowledge in terms of how these markets work, I think it's going to come down. So that's like the example of me giving myself grace. On the other hand, there are cards that, you know, probably realistically, if you take comps of similar players, similar grade, I've paid, you know, two or three X what, you know, the quote unquote comp would be. I like, you know, bidding really strongly with the, you know, the chubby mega, whatever kind of bid you want to call it. And, you know, sometimes those sales, you know, I hear people comment on their podcasts, like, oh, that seems way too high for this card. Like, and they're like, oh, it could be shilling, you know, this and that. And I was like, no, it's just a, and a couple of times you actually hear about the underbidder when I post it, which is a really interesting, it's really cool to like see that though. And just see how that dynamic plays out. And there, a lot of times they're like, there was no chance I would lose this. And I was like, I bid knowing that there was no chance I was going to lose it. But I go both spectrums. There are certain things once I get to a certain price point, I do give myself a little grace and be like, you know, this is a little too high. Like, and so I think if I, you know, I'll give myself a little more patience for it. I think everybody has that like price point where, you know, where that kind of kicks in. You're like, I think at a point later in time, I'll probably be able to get this for substantially less. And it's a lot of money. So that's kind of how I, the internal narrative that's always like, you know, running through my head when I'm like, when auction approaches type of thing. So
I love this. One of the things that I've been thinking about and put something out in the group today about it, the amount of copies when you're doing these sorts of things really matters and should be looked at, especially when you're putting your money towards those. And it sounds like you're like, you've got your head wrapped around like, okay, the Kylian Mbappe, yeah, it's probably one of the best cards and, you know, it's probably one of the most expensive, but you like are trying to mitigate some downside risk with the fact that like maybe you believe that this card could eventually be lower now because there's 50 copies. I'm curious on like, and this, like, we don't need to go like way deep down in the rabbit hole because I feel like we could get off track fast, but evaluating like the amount of copies that exist and how much you're going to pay for them, like, how do you think about that? Because like you mentioned with the Prism stuff earlier, like 10 copies is a whole lot less than 50 copies. So what, like, how do you think about that?
This is a topic I kind of like think about and obsess over a lot, especially when I was doing this, is that if you talk about 50 copies from a 90s era card, that's a lot different from 50 copies from a, you know, early 2000s teens era card, which is a lot different from a copy out of 50 in the 2020s. And so you kind of have to adjust like the amount of scarcity. And even, you know, with the card out of 50 for even the set that I was collecting, I don't know if it was because of me or what it partially could have been. Is it more started showing up after I kind of like was doing my set collecting? And so I mean, we can get into this later, just how like, you know, when people notice set collectors, they notice the prices on like as cards go up with set collecting, you know, more start coming out of the woodwork in terms of like people who are looking to kind of profit off of it or whatever. But yeah, so at a 50, yeah, you kind of have to adjust it for era. Card ladder, like, you know, having all that data at your fingertips. You talked about it like last week with Chris and Josh, just, you know, having all that data allows you to assess all these things. Cause a lot of times you'd be doing this in a vacuum. Like you wouldn't know how available these cards are, like how often they sold or how much they sold for. Now you have almost all that information at your fingertips. Like, and so you're really able to kind of really judge how often do I see this card. And so with all that data, you can kind of make that calculation in terms of how aggressive you need to be when one comes up. Like, you know, if it's out of 50, it hasn't sold for 8 years. Like, you know, from the 2020s, a card out of 10 may show up way more, you know, may show up 5 or 6 times in a year. And so it's, you know, and I think over time, like, you know, the 2020 cards numbered out of 50, they may show up less and less depending on as soon as, you know, those cards end up in collectors' hands who aren't, you know, moving them and stuff like that. But yeah, I think as eras, as time goes on, like, you know, the numbering out of 50 becomes more scarce. And so you kind of have, yeah, with all the data, you can kind of make that calculation, you know, yourself in terms of how scarce is this card going to be going forward, which more scarce it is, the more FOMO and, you know, aggressiveness you kind of have to go after them if you want to own them versus waiting, you know, a substantial amount of time for the next time. But
so if you are one of the contributors for the price increases because you're out there buying these random cards and paying them because you need them, like you mentioned, like each of these cards can be your own grail in a way when you're building something like this, I'm sure it's you've come to this situation where you're like trying to negotiate and have a conversation with someone regarding a card you need in your set, and they're trying to, you know, 3x you. Like, how do you have that chat and be like, dude, like this is me doing this, like help me out here. Like, has that happened, and if so, like how do you navigate it?
Yeah, I'm not one of the aggressive people about like contacting people directly if something pops up being like, oh, is this for sale, is that for sale. I try not to destination is how to combat it. I kind of wait for, you know, certain cards. If it's something that I really need, I'll shoot a message and like, you know, it's like, this is one I would really like, you know, if you're looking to let it go, let me know and we can work something out. So I try to limit my desperation, I guess you could say. And I kind of the faceless interaction on eBay is the other way I combat it. Like just throwing the bids out on eBay. I don't contact them off eBay and stuff like that and let them know that I'm some like desperate, you know, set collector. I like kind of go through the negotiations up from the anonymous perspective on eBay. That's the one way I like almost enjoy it. In some ways it's, yeah, that's how I mitigate kind of their knowledge of my desperation. It hasn't happened as much as with the gold set. With the red cards, definitely had people like 2x, 3x me in terms of what they've like, you know, prices they've thrown out. And I just have to be like, you know, it's out of 10. I'm going to wait you out. Like a lot of times I'll like, you know, this is what I'll pay for it. This is a very reasonable offer. And I just sit and wait for them to come back to me. And like a lot of times they will come back and be like, all right, I can, you know, you do like, a, you know, a little bit more, we can do it or whatever. And so just, you kind of gauging how motivated people are to sell, you kind of wait people out if they're motivated by money. Cause to be honest, I'm probably paying stronger than anybody. So it's, you know, because of my desperation, I know that. And I just being confident, you know, knowing the market, I know they'll eventually come back to me. So that, you know, around comps or a little bit over comps, it's always, but that's kind of how I approach it.
So we touched on 90s stuff, which I want to dig into, and always enjoy when guests of the Stacking Slabs podcast do a little homework. So you've done some of that, and I'll let you tell me when to like bring up the visual and we'll like talk through it. But I guess the question is, and I think the answer is yes, because I'll answer my own question, which I don't like to do. But my question was, are set collectors responsible for increases in specific segments, i.e. 90s cards? And it just seems to me, the more I've like looked, been on Instagram and, you know, looking at data and card ladder, it just seems like there's more and more collectors that exist that are trying to build sets from iconic sets. And so I would imagine when there's more set collectors that come into a specific segment, like prices increase, but would love any commentary that you have on this topic.
Yeah. So, you know, when I'm thinking about this and I'm like looking at a, you know, at a set, you can go to the first slide there. I like the way you can really tell whether a, you know, a set is like being set collected is not looking at the best players in the set, because, you know, if it's, especially if it's an iconic set, and you are, you know, looking at really iconic players from the set, you know, those places, you know, player, you know, cards can be just shot to the moon by, you know, just high-end player collectors who just, you know, want to own the cards from that set. So what I typically look at is actually the players who are just like, you know, really on the margins, who like a lot of people maybe haven't even heard of, and just see what their prices are, just to get an idea. Like, if someone's paying this money for this player, you know, most likely they're collecting the set. And so I just like did a generic search for, you know, went back to the 90s and like, this is what I did before, you know, had these experiences like with the sets I collect, but like, you know, when I went through the mental exercise of like looking at the 90s basketball, when I was kind of going through like, do I want to set collect, you know, like what was set collect mean from this era? You know, this is kind of the mental exercise I went through. And so I went to Card Ladder. I put in 97 PMG. I just found kind of a fairly random pair that had sold really strongly recently. And I just kind of looked at all their sales from like, you know, a set that like I thought was iconic. So I first went back to PMG Red. I know PMG Red is set collected. And so Tom Gugliotta was like, I think, one of the first names that came up. And I just kind of looked.
Such a great 90s player to use it as.
Yeah, no, I remember him. I mean, I grew up in like North Carolina. So he was played for the NC State, the Wolfpack there. And so he was an amazing player for them. But from the collective memory of the NBA, a lot of people probably may or may not remember him. If you were in the 90s, you probably remembered him. But anyway, I just was looking at the prices on his PMG Reds that had sold, and like, you know, 4K, 3K, you know, even like in the low end, kind of in the thousands. I'm like, no one is buying this card except to collect the set. Like, you know, and, you know, I went back to even, and so then I was like, okay, you know, definitely set collect is, you know, these prices are his most expensive cards by far. So someone's definitely collecting the set. I then went to, you know, like I mentioned before, like 96 Topps Chrome, I think is a really cool iconic set. And I was like, it's like, how do people set collect that? You know, I wonder, you know, there's no number of cards. I just, the really interesting thing from the numbers here is, I don't know, for our, you know, our watchers on your Patreon, you know, they can see kind of these numbers, but to go like through these, there's like three sales. Two of them are the refractors, and one of them is just like the base, you know. And the interesting thing is the base PSA 10 from a sale in 2023 went for $861. The PSA 10 refractor from 2022, which arguably was a more, you know, peak pandemic year, only went for $210. Like, so the refractor went for a quarter of the price of the base PSA 10, than PSA 10s. And I was like, someone is definitely 100% collecting the PSA 10 set for Topps Chrome. Like, no other reason why it would be like that expensive. And I was looking at the pop, I think it's like a pop, I think it was a pop 3, and PSA Topps Chrome refractor was a pop 6. And so I think just that subtle difference in the pop, you know, there may be, I've heard Nat on his podcast say he's collecting the PSA 10 refractor set. So I know there are set collectors of that, but like these kind of odd prices shows you 100% these are set collectors just competing for these cards. Cause there's no other reason that like someone would want like a random PSA 10 base card. So that's like, those are huge clues to me that set collectors are just, you know, causing these prices to go up like crazy. And so just as an emphasis, I was just like, I was looking at another iconic set. I mean, this is one where I was like, I just kind of did a random card ladder search for 2000 Topps Chrome gold refractors, which I think is, to be honest, I think it's a really iconic year. I think that, if I'm wrong, I'm someone will correct me, but I think that's the first year they numbered Topps Chrome gold cards. I think they did it in Finest earlier than that, but it's the first time they did it for Topps Chrome. I think these were out of 50 and veterans were out of 99. And so again, I did kind of random search. I was like, let me just look at a random, you know, kind of a random player. Pop. I was like, Tony Parker. I was like, interesting. Let's see what his sales do. He's a pretty iconic player, 4 championships. Just kind of a, you know, I'm sure they're a player collector, him. But let's see, like, how strong his sales are compared to, you know, like, unnumbered Tom Gugliotta cards. Like, you know, and, like, 10, I think as soon as it popped one, like, went for, like, $500. So I was like, wow, that's, you know, it's a good price. But compared to an $800 base PSA 10 Tom Gugliotta, it's like, that's not crazy high. And so I'm like, it doesn't seem to me that, like, set collectors were, you know, definitely weren't collecting for PSA 10. But, you know, and even the PSA, you know, the PSA 9s, I think if you look here in kind of the 150, you know, 170 range, you know, being sold. So, like, that's not even really that high. So it's just like these prices, it made me think that there are not many people who are actually trying to complete the set. And there may be some, but it doesn't seem like there are that many. And so, and that's like interesting to me because it seemed like a really iconic set. If you, like, going after the gold refractors from that set would just be absolutely legendary, I felt like. And so, but it doesn't seem many people, you know, have kind of taken on that journey. Obviously, to collect the LeBron gold is like really expensive and stuff like that. So maybe that's what kind of pushed people away. But that was really interesting. I was a little surprised. I was like, I thought that maybe there would be more set collector pressure, but based off assessing kind of the sales, it, you know, I was like, it doesn't seem like they're that collector. So that was interesting. You can go to the next one too. And so kind of going even into the more modern era, let's go to the next. Let's see. Numbers.
Right. Here we go. And so
another set that I'm pretty sure is highly player collected. And I just wanted to like, kind of like prove it by pulling up cards from random players just to see how they stacked up is the 2012 Prism Gold run. And so as we said, like once you get to 10, and this is a card that's like now, you know, going on 12 years old, 10 is like really scarce, especially for a set that everyone just, you know, first Prism Gold, like just absolutely just forefront of everyone's mind type of thing. And so I just picked the 4 most random players, just, you know, I think these may have been the only sales of these cards or of any variation of these cards that were card ladder. Or I think maybe one of them had like 2 sales or something. And it was probably the same card that just got like relisted or something. But anyway, the players that I have up on the screen for those not on your Patreon are 2012 gold Andris Biedrins from the Warriors. Not a particularly iconic player, you know, raw card, $579. Nolan Smith, I think a PSA, PSA 10, went for $404, which seems kind of reasonable. He's a Duke player, so like I definitely remember him, but didn't have much of an NBA career, to be honest. Serge Ibaka, a little more notable. He went for a little more, born 817. And then Malcolm Lee, which I don't remember him at all. He went for $585, which is just like, I was like, I clearly, you know, 100% people are buying these cards as set collectors. Cause like I, you know, one off, maybe there's a team collector who pushes them up, but like when you see like multiple sales of multiple, just very obscure players like this, like you, it has to be set collectors who are, you know, competing against each other for these.
That was one of my questions, just jumping in on that. And maybe this can be through your own experience, but I would imagine Prism Golds are one of those where you've got someone who the people who are absolutely certifiably insane trying to collect the whole 2012 Prism Gold basketball set. Then you've got like your team collectors. Then you've got, God forbid, you've got an Andris Biedrins player collector out there too. But like all of these like groups converge when a card like this goes up for auction, and then people like see a number like, you know, $579 and like, what the hell? But like when there's that much competition, that's what happens to the price. So like, I don't know, like as you're a set collector, is this something you face and feel with certain players because someone likes the club that one of the guys you need is in, someone collects one of the players that you need, like for sure. There's other set collectors, like what's that like?
Yeah, so I mean, I pulled up 2 cards as examples of kind of these kind of phenomenon that has happened to me. And so like, so for instance, you know, for those on your Patreon, this was a card I got. This is the 2017 gold Roberto Firmino. So this was the 98th card that I got. And so this one took me forever to find. You're like, Roberto Firmino, like if you're a casual soccer guy, you may never even heard of this guy, but he plays for he played for Liverpool during kind of an iconic run where they won the Premier League, they won the Champions League. He was a great player for them. And, you know, in soccer, team collectors for Liverpool are some of the craziest collectors, and like their cards go for, you know, way more. And so like when I was going for that, first of all, I couldn't get anyone to, you know, it never went up for sale. This was like the first, you know, like one of the first public sales of it in like a couple years. And I couldn't find it. And then when it came up, I knew that, you know, for similar, quality players, it was going to go, I think it went for, you know, maybe a 2x multiple of that. And I knew it would, because I knew I was going to be competing potentially with other set collectors. With Liverpool collectors, you know, I know there are Roberto Firmino collectors. And so like for, you know, it causes it to go 2x what, you know, a quote unquote comparable other, you know, player of comparable stature went for. So, and then, you know, more recently, when you start getting into the low numbered stuff, like these PSA 10s, that's when things go crazy. And so this was one I just recently picked up. This is the 2017 Topps Chrome Red Refractor Christian Pulisic. Number to 10. This was the first sale in 2.5 years of one of these cards. I think a PSA 10 sold, I think, in, you know, 2021, you know, during peak pandemic. And it was just like, I think it had two sales of the same card within like, I think, a few month period. And it was like $7,500 and $8,500 for that. And Christian Pulisic, you would not compare him, the best European, he's the best, like probably American player of like this generation, if not the best American player ever. But if you compare him to a lot of other European players, no one would ever claim that he's a better player than say Luis Suarez or somebody like that. Like, but like, you know, his PSA 10 went for 2 or 3 multiples like of a player like that. And, because he's American, you know, American still is like the largest market for collecting soccer cards. So that's like, so player collectors for Pulisic, because he's an American player, people do love these, you know, the reds are like some of the best cards for these like players. So, so the player collect, you know, I was, and when I ultimately bid again on this, I knew there was one specific player collector who had posted on his story that he, really wanted it, you know, contact him if you were selling it type of thing. And I knew what his bankroll was. And so I was like, I knew what I had to bid to get it to like beat him. And so it was just like, you can imagine what that did to the price. And he contacted me after I posted it saying like, I put in a bid. I didn't think, to be honest, I didn't think anybody would beat it. I was like, yeah, I knew you were bidding on it. And I knew what price I had to put in. my bid was substantially higher than what it went for, knowing that. And I just kind of knowing all these dynamics, just, you know, in like, you know, in a BGS 8, you know, I was paying, you know, I paid like half the price that I paid for players who were just like absolutely, you know, top 5 or 10 players like in the world type of thing. And as good as Pulisic is, he wasn't, he's not nearly top 10 in the world. You know, as a joke, people call him the LeBron James of soccer, just because they, like there was an episode of Pawn Stars or something where some guy came in with a Christian Pulisic autograph something. And he's like, yeah, this is the LeBron James of soccer. And everyone in the soccer community is like, no, he's not LeBron James of soccer. but we—that's why we call. If you weren't familiar with that story, that's why people call him the LeBron James of soccer. It's more tongue in cheek because of like a Pawn Stars episode. But anyway, but those were two examples of like team collectors, like player collectors, who just caused like these cards to go way above the value of like what a player of that stature would really go for. So those dynamics are such huge, especially when they come together. But,
do we want to hit the last one here?
So this was one that I think was more kind of like down your lane of collecting. So I was like, oh, let me look at football gold prism. And so I was like, is football gold prism set collecting as big as basketball? And so I was just kind of looking at the prices on those, because that's more apples to apples, I guess you could say, in terms of like how many numbers in the parallel can kind of give you an idea. I think the base sets are pretty similar for basketball and football. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Like, I think this was someone who tried to collect the set, who just like aborted, was like, there's no way, I can't do it. I'm a lunatic. And they aborted and they sold like, I don't know, however many this was, like 15 or 20. at the same time of kind of very obscure players. I mean, some of them were, you know, I think there are team collectors who collect some of these players. And you probably know better than me that, like, I think you've had Jacksonville Jaguar collectors.
So
I think
to be honest with you, and this was where, like, set collectors impact everything and everybody. I saw these sales happen, and I saw, like, you know, the Maurice Jones-Drew sell for, you know, $685. And I had the Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis, my team Colts. Like, I had thought about doing the team set. And, like, that was my – like, when I saw these sales, it was my kick in my butt and being like, if I don't do this now, even though I'm going to be paying more – like, literally, he doesn't have a lot of cards. I'll put a caveat in. But, like, the number one Robert Mathis, most expensive card of all time, I proudly paid for. But I felt like that was the moment because I didn't want it to, like, 2X, like, 4 years from now and me, like, regret it. So, but that's because I saw these sales who were somebody who obviously was trying to build the set. And I think, like, I'm just fascinated by, like, the influence of all those dynamics and just the different lanes we collect and how they all converge.
Yeah. Yeah. And those who are listening to this, like, how many is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like, something about 15. There were 15 sales on, like, March 20th, 2024 of gold 2012 Prism football cards. And they range anywhere from, I think, the low to mid 100s all the way up to, I think the highest was 685. And I don't think Maurice Jones-Drew was the highest. He's probably the most notable name of all these. The rest,
Josh Cribbs, I think, was also 685 with
it. Yeah. Josh Cribbs is also 685. And he's, you know, I think maybe the guy who bought it was on your Patreon or.
Yes. Yeah, he was. That's right.
I think he posted it. He was really excited about
Shout
it.
Shout out Dibs.
Yeah, Dibs. Yeah. He's a big Browns collector. And Josh Cribbs was a very fun player for the Browns. So I guess he had moments. And, like, you know, if you're a player or team collector, you know, a lot of times these sales are based on moments as much as, like, the longevity of, like, a really, you know, Hall of Fame career. But just so I think those two sales were really influenced by team set collectors. So they were people who wanted to collect the set in a certain team type of thing. But when I start seeing the sales in the 120s, 150s range, there may be a set collector, but there wasn't a hugely competitive set collectors going after this, after these cards. Cause if you're really seriously going after the set, I think you'd be paying well above, like, 150, 120 for these cards. So they're, you know, there may be people dabbling in, like, collecting these cards, but not necessarily just really aggressively going after the set collecting. So I kind of, you know, basketball for sure. I think there's, you know, people aggressively going after set football, maybe less so. So those are just the exercises, like, you know, thinking about this that I go through.
I love it. And I think the people out there are really going to. It's when people get nerdy and talk about data and try to come up with reasons why, it's always typically the best content that people like on this show. So appreciate, like, the work there digging into Card Ladder. Maybe, like, as we round the corner, and we're gonna have to do this again because there's so many different lanes to this topic that I want to go down with you, but maybe just to close it out, like, there are people that are listening who are actively engaged in a set or have thought about it and this might push them over the edge to do it. You're someone who has experience. What is, like, one piece of advice that you'd share with individuals who are looking to dive into set collecting?
So I think you have that honest conversation with yourself. What set is from an era that I really enjoy? What are the cards that I just visually enjoy looking at no matter who the player is on it? Like, those are the types of aesthetic and, like, things that keep you engaged in a set. So I think kind of having that discussion with yourself, if you're, you know, if the 90s is, like, nothing's better than the 90s, like, all these guys now are soft, like, the 90s guys are where it's at, like, you know, that's probably the area you want to look in for what sets you want to collect. And, you know, or now you're like, I want to be involved in a set for players that are still playing now and so that I can be excited when I see them, you know, this and that. So kind of just being honest with yourself, what era, because that's really what you're collecting when you're collecting a set. You're collecting an era, and you're also collecting cards that just you really enjoy for whatever reason, whether you just really like how they look. These are cards that get other people excited. So that's gets you excited. So kind of that whole, like, kind of feedback loop. So that's kind of the first step, kind of identifying what you want to look. And then then you have to determine what degree of difficulty do you want. You're going to get more enjoyment, like a sense of accomplishment, the higher degree of difficulty you go for, but you kind of have to, like I said, dig into detail. You have to figure out, how hard is this going to be? Am I going to get really frustrated, really bored with this if I'm working on this for 5 years? Or maybe, for me, it's like some of the things I've gone into, it's like, I want it to be a 5-year journey. I want it to be a 10-year journey if it has to be. Like, I want it to be that. And so how long of a journey do you want it to be is also part of it too. Obviously how, and also how far you want to extend yourself financially and things like that. But so, yeah. And so I would say, I think there's, if there's a set that, you'd be really excited with going over 10 years, pick one set like that. And you can always say, let me pick another set that, is going to be a little bit easier that I can accomplish within a year. And you can have like two of those challenges or even more. Like, I think, like I said, I keep bringing his name up, and Nat Turner, I think he's got like 10 different sets going or something like that of crazy stuff. So, and that was really cool to me. It's like, you could have multiple different difficulty set journeys going. And that just can really sustain you and like enjoying the hobby. And so just kind of going through those exercises, time, cost, how much do you enjoy the cards? Like, you can really just put all those factors together. And I think a lot of times sets will kind of bubble to the surface. And if you don't, and like I said, some of these base sets are really large. And if there's not 100 card, 100 card base sets, I think a pretty good size. 200's probably not too bad, but once you start getting above that, that's probably too big. So, if you love Kaboom cards, for instance, they're non-numbered, so they're fairly plentiful, and the set storm is not that big. So if you want to pick smaller sets that you can accomplish that are really kind of iconic, you can go like that route, So I even did that, downtown is another one in like basketball and football. Soccer, I did the downtown equivalent, which is the World Cup Prism, National Landmarks. It's a 32 card set. I chose to up the degree of difficulty by doing the out of 25 Mojo variation. I was just showing the Lionel Messi version of it, which is, awesome cards. It's one of my favorites. But it's like you said, for this set, this was awesome because like you could go for the non-numbered version of it, or you could up the degree of difficulty and go for the out of 25. And so like you can kind of like tailor these things to like kind of where you're at in terms of a collector. So there's so much creativity you can get in terms of what you want to collect and what you really love. And I think those are beautiful cards. Like, some people think Kabooms are beautiful cards. Like, so I don't care who the player is, even like, they're just beautiful cards a lot of times. And so it's really, you kind of dig into almost the beauty of like the cards as much as the players who are on them. So it's just really, really awesome.
You can follow him at Mad City Collector. James, this was fun. We'll have to do it again. I know I learned a ton. Thanks a lot, man.
Appreciate it.
That was one of my favorite chats in a while. I think there's so much we can learn about the activity, behavior, psychology that goes into all things set collecting. Hopefully that conversation made you think a little bit differently about what's going on in the hobby. You take care of yourself, take care of others around you. I'll be back, more Stacking Slabs on the other side.